I'm just like, look, it's a French word. We say rendezvous. I know it should be rendezvous in English. Just suck it up and say it the way I'm teaching it to you. And they're like, this is stupid. I hate it.
Comes with Badgers. That's what I was going to say.
Welcome to Comes with Badgers, the weekly podcast where we discuss all things badger, but not honey badger.
Oh, they don't give a fuck.
All right, so hi, it's Comes with Baggage.
I'm so leaving this. This is fantastic.
I hate this. This is amazing.
Your favorite travel podcast is back only for a week, and we're already fucking up because we're so out of practice.
Our rhythms are off. I've had one too many protein smoothies this morning, so I'm buzzing.
I'm on my second can of wine.
That is a classy evening in.
It's called, I'm not, like, this is not an ad, but I'm going to say it anyways. It's called Nice, which is the brand of canned wine, and its motto or like tagline or whatever is wine for whenever.
Nothing about that sounds nice, but I'm not judging because I've drunk far worse things from cans. So how are you? What's going on this week?
I'm great. Had Thanksgiving, as everyone heard about last week on our episode. It was so amazing. Oh my God, so much food, so much desserts and pies, and ate my weight in stuffing and green bean casserole, and played lots of games.
Did you have marshmallow sweet potato casserole?
Sure did.
Some people I talk to in America are like, that's not a thing. And then other people are like, that's totally a thing.
It absolutely is a thing. They're lying.
And I got in trouble this week because I told you pumpkin pie was poo. You weren't happy with that.
It is not. It is literally the most delicious. I still have some in my fridge right now, actually. I should eat them. Pumpkin pie is delicious. I do prefer pecan pie or pecan pie, depending on who you're asking. I'm fancy, so I say pecan.
Pecan and dance and chance.
I don't say those. But I love pumpkin, and it's delicious. And I was like looking at a map. What was I looking at? It was like a map of
the most popular pie per region.
Yeah, and pumpkin wasn't even on it. And then it was like apple, which like, yeah, apple pie is good. But there's a few other ones. And one was like lemon meringue, which that's also good too. But like these aren't, I couldn't believe it was like Thanksgiving pies and pumpkin didn't even make the list.
Was it specific to Thanksgiving? I thought it was just the most popular pie. Like,
no, it was specific to Thanksgiving.
Oh, because I'm all about a berry pie, like cherry or something. But for Thanksgiving, I feel like you have to go with the traditional staples, you know,
yeah.
Apple, pumpkin, pecan, if you fancy, pecan, if you're not.
No, it was great. And then we played this game Scrawl that I'm obsessed with. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's for 17 and up. So it's like, you know how the rage, like all the rage with Cards Against Humanity?
Oh, yeah.
Scrawl is so much better.
It's kind of like
a mix between Pictionary and the telephone game, but with words.
Interesting.
So like each person has their own little drawing board in their hand and a card that says like an action or a phrase or something.
And an inappropriate action or phrase.
It doesn't always have to be inappropriate. It's just like a monkey playing the drums with bananas. But like
nice,
then
right.
You have a minute to draw that. And then once the minute's up, you have to pass it to whichever direction you please. Like, but you know, if you're all going clockwise or counterclockwise, whatever, you pass it. And then the person's looking at whatever you drew and has to put a paper on top of that and guess what it is that you were drawing.
Oh, nice.
And then you keep passing it around the circle till you get your board back to you. And then you go through, like, this is what it was supposed to be. And then, like, you go through the series of...
Oh, that sounds like fun.
It's change. And, like, I took some videos of some that just ended up being the, like, most ridiculous ones. And I'm not gonna... But, like, one of them was, like... sex bomb, but like, oh, how boy. Do you draw a sex bomb?
Tom Jones, clearly.
Well, no, but no one's going to guess sex bomb. So I drew a vagina with a penis
okay.
plus a bomb.
Okay, yeah.
And the next person guessed orgasm.
Which I could see. That's an easy jump to make.
And then so imagine trying to draw an orgasm. And so it's like this stick figure with a bunch of squiggly lines coming off of the bottom of it.
And the next person probably guessed he was peeing or something.
No, the next person put angrily fucking a small tornado.
Wow, I need to get this game, like, immediately.
So then the next drawing was two stick figures having sex, doggy style, and then kind of next to a tornado, but it doesn't really look like a tornado, it's just, like, tall, squiggly lines. And then the last person guessed banging her up against a wall.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, so, this does. I can see why this isn't for kids, but I like it.
It is so much fun to play, and you just end up, like, crying laughing at things.
Perfect. I need to get this for a sibling for Christmas.
Yeah, it's amazing. Because
this is something my family would love.
You get it on Amazon. That's where I got it. And it is way better than Cards Against Humanity.
Nice. Well, Cards Against Humanity was fantastic. It's just, what, 6 years of playing it now? It's kind of, it's losing a bit of
Once you have every extension, well, it almost like numbs you.
Yeah, you get used to hearing people say, like, hate fucking a corpse. You're like, okay, cool. I've made my mum say that phrase now.
Yeah.
My life is complete.
It was fun because I had two friends come to Friendsgiving, mm-hmm. an English friend and an Australian friend. And it was for both of them, it was their first Thanksgiving. And
nice.
It was really cute because we did the whole thing where you go around and you have to say what you're thankful for. And both of them were like, this is amazing. Like, I'm thankful for being able to experience my first Thanksgiving and blah, 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 blah. Very sweet.
Nice.
But it's like kind of like our last episode. Like, it was fun to like share my holiday tradition with people.
Yeah.
And like we, you know, came to decide last week, it's way better as like a, I mean, Christmas obviously is better, but it's better in the sense of like, there's no,
as like a social gathering, yeah. kind of a fun. Yeah.
And everyone
I'm excited.
Should have it.
Cause we're heading, like my wife's family and I are all heading over to Manhattan Beach next week, where there's a family friend and there's going to be like 18 or 19 people. We're on pie duty, and we're going to play games and drink and eat a lot, and it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. You'll have a blast.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. Well, my weekend was not as exciting as yours, I'm afraid to say. I have nothing quite as interesting as angry fucking a tornado to talk about. But I guess my exciting news is that my wife and I are pretty sure we figured out where we're going to spend the first half of next year, like before our US wedding.
Uh-huh.
Because we'd been bouncing around between going back to Vietnam or maybe going to Tanzania for work or going to Portugal. But we've had more and more of our like blogging friends have suggested Tbilisi in Georgia, the country, not the state.
Yeah, I mean,
so we're really keen on that.
Was it Tomo and Megzi?
That's where Tomo and Megzi are. Yeah. They're still there. They've been there for 6 months, and when I asked, you know, what they were thinking, they're like, we're not planning to leave anytime soon.
So you're going to meet up with them when you're there?
Oh, for sure.
That's so cool.
It's great because Georgia has a one-year visa-free travel.
Yeah.
So you can literally go in and spend an entire year renting an apartment there, traveling, work, whatever you want, as long as you're not working for a Georgian company, which we won't be. So we're thinking we're going to do 3 or 4 months there while it's cold and miserable in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it starts to get – the weather gets a bit better and we need to get back to the US for late May,
mm-hmm.
We'll just start making our way across, you know, doing some backpacking through Europe because I've never been.
Mm-hmm.
And then fly from, like, France or London all the way back to the east coast of the US for our friend's wedding.
Awesome.
So it's going to be good. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, and for those of you
that
haven't listened to all of our episodes yet, or maybe you're just starting to listen to them now, Tomo and Megzi were from our
food episode.
Yeah, just put it in your mouth.
Yes, with Tomo and Megzi.
Yeah. So you should definitely go back and listen to that yet if you haven't.
Their description of the food there was a big seller.
I mean,
like that bread, cheese, meat, and potato. That's like, I'm going to die.
And the wine.
The cheap wine. Oh, yeah. Yeah, their Instagram was full of...
Well, maybe I'll have to come visit you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think we can do that. We're going to get a big apartment, so you can totally come.
We'll do a local episode there.
Oh, yeah, like a Wines of Georgia, just get increasingly drunk as we record the episode.
I mean, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, how could it be bad? The only daunting part is obviously... I don't speak a word of Georgian. In fact, until 2 days ago, I wasn't even sure if it was the language they spoke there. I wasn't sure if it was like Georgian or if they spoke some other language that isn't named after the country. So that's a bit daunting. I have nothing to go on.
Well, you should buy. I know this girl that sells these little guides to learning new languages really quickly and fast and easily.
Oh, wow. I definitely didn't know about that before starting this line of conversation.
So we have our first interview of the second season today, and Woo! It is with Amarens, and she is from Holland or Netherlands. Holland's Either a part way. Of the Netherlands, right? Yeah, so she's from the Netherlands. She's Dutch. She speaks like 500 languages, and she studied linguistics at university. And she runs a very popular Instagram called the Foreign Just Foreign Language Collective. And she's also starting a new project called Untranslatable about foreign idioms and phrases and things like that. So we had the pleasure of interviewing her, and it was such a great time. We learned so much. I'm super jealous of all of her language knowledge. So enjoy this interview with Amarens.
Yes.
I'm already pronouncing it wrong.
Off to a flying start.
Amarens?
Amarens, perfect, yes.
Amarens.
There we go.
Perfect.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, so where are you from?
I'm from the Netherlands.
The Netherlands.
Okay. Yes.
Like, considering the pronunciation of the name, it's obviously not like
a yeah, no, it's not
traditional
yeah.
English name.
That usually gives it away.
Whereabouts in the Netherlands are you from?
I'm from the northeast, actually. A very and not very populated area, so to speak. I can't really call it countryside. It's more just like mostly nothing. But it is where I'm from. So
that sounds like home to me.
Yeah, exactly.
More country town myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm from suburbs. It's boring. It's actually quite fun. So I love the Netherlands. I tell this to every Dutch person I ever meet. Like, I've never met a Dutch person that I don't like.
Oh, really? Well, that's
it's gotten to the point where I almost use it as like a warning. Like, so don't fuck it up for the rest of your life.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing I thought. I was like, oh shit, I'm on thin ice now.
I can't remember an unpleasant Dutch person.
No, you guys are always so nice.
Shit.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad to hear.
The pressure's on you to really impress today.
I'm so glad to hear my country people are behaving, because when I'm abroad, I don't have anything against Dutch people. But when I see Dutch people somewhere, I always kind of like listen in to see what kind of Dutch people they are and if I like potentially like them before I out myself. And if I don't like them, then I just kind of like pretend I'm a foreigner or something.
God, that's like me around any American.
And me around any Australian in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, yeah, so exactly. Totally, really. Yeah, yeah.
If I hear an Australian accent in Bali or Vietnam or Thailand, I'm like, oh, I'm from New Zealand, eh, bro?
Just throw on an English accent.
Yeah, yeah, you always have your backup, right?
Yeah, I think English people, I'm trying to think of people, like, do any nationalities like them, their country people when they're abroad? I feel like everyone's always embarrassed about.
I think if it's like really small countries, then they're just so excited to meet someone from their own country. Larger the country, the bigger the risk that someone is an asshole.
Asshole?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can say that.
I do. My friend Jenny, that I've traveled with quite a bit, she's from Sweden, and she always loves running into Swedish people.
Yeah, it's
I think people are lovely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's not to like?
Speak Swedish.
I feel like most of the Chinese people I've encountered while traveling are super excited to see other Chinese people, but also super excited if you have any interest in China at all. Like, they're super proud to talk about China.
Oh, interesting. But they must meet Chinese people all the time. Like,
yeah,
it must just be like a really exciting time for them. Like, all the time. The
excitement is more that like there's like an American or an Australian who speaks a little Chinese and is is excited to talk to them about where they're from in China, they're like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Whereas if a person comes up to me and asks, like, if I'm Australian, I'm like, why? What's the problem? Did we do something
what's
again?
What's your angle?
What did my prime minister say this time?
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We wanted to bring you on because we are talking about learning foreign languages.
Yes.
And you apparently have some history in that, don't you?
Yes, yeah.
So how many languages do you speak fluently?
Fluently. So I speak four languages fluently. So I speak Dutch, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. But
you've beaten me by three.
Same.
No, but I mean, first of all, as a Dutch person, you don't really get to not learn any languages, you know? It's just, if I tell Dutch people I speak four languages, they're like, okay, so you finished high school, like, what else is... So in high school we get French and German, and so I also had both of those, but I was terrible at them. Like I think French was like my worst subject ever. Like I nearly had to redo a year because I wasn't passing my French course.
And you have to take French and German?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Inspired. Okay.
And so, I suppose you're also having to take English and obviously Dutch as well.
Yes. Yeah. So we have English and Dutch.
Do you guys ever learn math or history?
Oh yeah. Also. Also, yeah. We do it all. Now basically English and Dutch are obligated, and then in the first 3 years you get both German and French. And then after that, you get to choose which foreign language you want to continue with. So either French or German. I think you always have to pick one, but I'm not entirely sure. And yeah, that's just the way it goes. But that still doesn't ensure that people learn it, you know? Like, you have to learn it, but that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm guessing you didn't choose French to continue with.
I actually did. I did.
You did?
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
oh,
surprisingly.
Wow, you're stuck up for punishment.
Because, yeah, as much as I was, I guess, better at German, I really disliked it as well. And then I thought, well, after 3 years, I feel like I can kind of speak some German, but I still speak no French at all. So I might as well continue with French and learn something. But then 6 years, like, or 3 years later, 3 years after that, still don't speak French. So that was a waste of time.
On a scale of like 1 to 10, where would you say your French is after 6 years?
Oh, I'd say like a 3 maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I might be able to catch up then.
Yeah.
I know two words, so.
Well, it's a big reason I wanted to do this episode is because I'm dying to learn French. And in American high schools, you only have to take 2 years of a foreign language.
Okay.
And we don't learn anything before high school.
Yeah.
So like you only learn English up until you're, you know, 14.
Yeah.
And then you like are forced to take 2 years of a language, and you get, at my school, you got to choose between French, German, and Spanish.
Okay.
Nice.
And I really, like, I've always had this attraction to French and really wanted to learn French, but my mom wouldn't let me because she was like, you live in California, it's much more valuable to speak Spanish.
Yeah.
So I did 2 years and I aced both classes and then literally never used it ever again. And
yeah,
now that I've lived in Mexico again and I've worked in like kitchens and restaurants and stuff, like my Spanish isn't bad and I can actually understand a decent amount, but I can't speak it as well.
Yeah.
But I still like have always desperately wanted to learn French. And I've just moved to London recently and I've started looking up like after work evening, like adult language classes for French. And I've been doing my Duolingo and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's so hard, especially because I'm not already like bi or trilingual. To start learning a language, I feel like when you're already
from scratch. Yeah, yeah, I've got the same problem because we just do 1 year of language in high school and you can choose. But at my school, we only had the choice between Japanese and Indonesian, which at least are relevant to our region.
Mm-hmm.
But I did 1 year and I did well at it. But I remember saying to my teacher, like, I don't see the point in learning this. I'm never going to travel, which is stupid because that's literally all I've been doing since I finished college.
That's very ironic.
Japanese is a language I would kill to know fluently. Like, Japanese and Korean and Chinese are the three I really want to pin down, you know. Not that I'm ambitious at all.
So you come out of high school, English, Dutch, and some German, and some French.
Yeah.
And how did you learn Spanish and Portuguese then?
So basically, it was already during high school when I was 16, I did a high school exchange in Panama.
Oh, and cool.
Yes. Yeah, that was really cool. And I spoke like a little Spanish before that, but it's very basic, you know. Like when I went there, I was like, oh, I speak a lot. And then I got there and I was like, oh, I don't speak anything, you know.
Yeah, also, that's what it was like when I moved to Mexico as well. I was like, yeah, I can totally understand people. And then I get there, I'm like, I have no fucking clue.
But also the pronunciation and the slang that was like completely different than the Spanish from Spain that I'd been learning. So it was completely different. But I guess the good thing was that nobody there spoke English. So you kind of have to adapt. And I really did want to learn Spanish. So I did. And after a year,
submersion is definitely a great way to go.
Yeah, definitely. But even then, I think there were other exchange students that didn't really learn. Like, even at the end of the year, they didn't speak Spanish. And I always was so surprised because I was like, so, like, what do you do all day if you don't communicate with anyone, you know? It's like...
Were they just kind of hanging out with each other? Maybe were they... from all different other countries?
Yeah, they were from all over. I remember there was this one, I mean, like, this really doesn't, it doesn't matter where you're from or anything, but I remember there was this one Thai kid, and he was there, he arrived like 6 months before us, so he also left like 6 months earlier, and then like, I think in one of the exchange meetings before we left, I remember he came up to me, and he said just the same thing that he said the first time he met me, which was like, hola, ¿cómo estás? And like, that was the extent of his Spanish.
The extent of what he learned the whole
time. And then
year
I was
there, 6 months he was there.
Yeah. And I would try to ask him a question about like his school, and then he just didn't understand it. And I was like, okay.
He also like slowly turns and walks away.
Yeah. But yeah, that was pretty much it. Just like the, you know, the smile and wave, and that was it.
It's definitely easy to get caught up in your bubble. I was going to say English bubble, but I mean, obviously if you're Thai, it wouldn't be an English bubble.
Yeah, no, I mean, it happens. I lived in
China for 5 years, and my Chinese is, you know, not even survival Chinese. So it's very easy to get lazy about it.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got other people who speak your language around.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's how you learned Spanish. Were you quite fluent after that exchange?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I still, it's really hard to, like, assess your level of Spanish or just of a language in general, because you always feel like there's always more that you could learn, and there's always things that you don't quite feel comfortable with. But yeah, I think I was pretty fluent when I came out. And as I was there, I was bored a lot because I wasn't allowed to leave the house all the time. So I had like a television, and I would just like watch whatever was on, and and I would like switch the subtitles to different languages just for like fun. And so that's where, yeah, there was really nothing else to do. So I switched it to Portuguese, which I could then kind of pick up because it was similar to Spanish, but it was still like different enough to be like interesting. And so I kind of just started like picking up words here and there. And then when I came back, I kind of started to look for Brazilian people to kind of, and I told them I spoke Portuguese, but it was a lie. I didn't speak anything. but just the fact that they thought I spoke Portuguese meant that they were always speaking Portuguese to me. And I had to like keep up.
Thinking or swimming.
Yeah. And
I love that though. And it's like, I'm on your foreign collective, a foreign language collective right now. And I see you've got like a lot of links to, you know, Spanish movies you can watch to like for free. Like,
yeah.
Movies and TV shows are such a powerful way to learn a language because you can watch, you might know them already in your native tongue, and then you can watch them in another language and kind of pick up language that way.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. Yeah. I mean, I always say that, like, I studied English in high school, obviously, but I, like, honestly, the education was kind of basic. But I also watched like a shit ton of TV when I was younger, like an incredible amount. The reason I speak English today and I feel like comfortable speaking English, like I've never spent more than a week in an English speaking country. And that was like, I went to London twice or something, you know, but just by watching a lot of TV, it made me very comfortable with the language because I would just hear it all the time. And so I had a lot of reference and I was like, oh yeah, this is what people say, you know?
Were there any particular TV shows or movies that you found were really good for that? Like that the language was kind of accessible?
I think all of them are kind of, you know, as long as you don't watch like a period piece that's very like old English or something. That would be, yeah, it would be funny.
There were a lot of Chinese students who I knew who spoke with English accents because they'd learned English watching Harry Potter.
Yes.
I know you said English accents, but for some reason my mind just went to American and I was like, that doesn't make sense.
No, they'd come up and be like, hello, I'm Jeff. And I'd be like, why are you talking like that? And they had these weird, and it was very Harry Potter. And the other one that's popular in China, or the other ones are like sitcoms, Friends, How I Met Your Mother and Big Bang Theory are great because there's so many episodes and the language is Big Bang Theory has a lot of convoluted scientific and geek terms, but for the most part, the language is quite accessible. So
but not even in English do you know those terms, you know, like when we watch
that's true.
You're like, I don't know what that means.
You're like, I don't know what a quantum bridge is.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they've never said the term quantum bridge. No. I just put quantum in front of something. I'm like,
I mean, I feel like Friends is literally in every single country. Like, I've been to so many countries where I've turned on a random, like, TV and every channel is in a local language, but there's always a channel that has an episode of Friends playing that is, like, dubbed the other language.
Oh, for sure. Like, when I did the subtitle thing with Portuguese, I watched Friends and it was really good because you really see that they talk about, like, a lot of daily stuff and, like, Joey always saying, like, how you doing? And that's, like, an actual phrase that you can, like, you just have to say it in a less creepy way, but it's like, it's a phrase that people use, you know?
I love it. Like, you just learned how to say how you do in another language, but with the same, like, inflection that you use it.
Yeah. It would be very.
Como esta?
Everyone just thinks you're really lecherous.
I remember, like, after high school, my mom forced me to take Spanish, and I went to university, and I was like, I fucking want to learn French. I'm learning French. And so I took it at school. And for some reason in my mind, I thought I was going to become fluent in French and I was going to become a translator. And that was going to be my job. And I didn't last past 1 year because I fucking hated my teacher. And I found out that, like, there were other teachers for, like, the first couple of levels. But when you got to the higher levels, she was the only one that taught those ones. And I was like, nah, I'm out. But you had to do a certain number of lab hours working on, like, this language book and stuff like that. Or you could watch movies. And I just used to watch like Amelie and like tons of like different French movies. And I actually got really into French film.
Yeah.
So I watch them constantly and I just watch them with American subtitles or American English subtitles. So I can understand what they're saying, but then you're also like hearing the language while you're watching the subtitles.
Yeah.
And so it helps. And then like when I lived in Melbourne, in Australia, I dated this French guy who he spoke very little English because all he did was hang out with all of his French friends all the time. Like he worked and lived with all of his French friends. And
classic.
So, like he lived in Australia for a year and barely learned English.
Yeah.
And then I spoke very little French. So our like 3 months of dating basically consisted of us watching movies, either in French movies with American English subtitles or English movies in French subtitles. And that was it.
Okay.
That was our romance. So like, I know like, I can like hear and recognize French, I guess, but I still definitely don't speak it fluently. I want to just be able to, like, you can say words in French and I'll know like vocabulary wise, like what those words mean. Mm-hmm. But then you hear someone speak in French and it just sounds so fast. And I'm like, I have no idea.
I'm the same with Chinese. Like I'll be listening to Rochelle, who my wife speaks fluent Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
I'll listen to her talking to a Chinese person and I'll be like, I'm getting the gist of what's being said. Like, I'm like, okay, they're talking about food. Oh, okay, he just told her Chinese is really good, and she said it's just okay. But as soon as you ask me to say something, I'm like, ni hao. well, sure, Chris. And then, but, like, I'll listen to someone speaking it and be like, oh, I know a bunch of those words, but I cannot string them together.
Yeah. No, when I was with Portuguese, because it was so similar to Spanish, I very quickly had the idea that I was, like, getting it, kind of, but not quite getting it, you know, not to the degree that I could actually say something, or if I had to say something, I was like, fuck, how do I actually, I could understand what they were saying, but then I was like, oh, it probably sounds something like Spanish, but I have no idea what would be different, if that makes sense. Like, I would just want to reply in Spanish instead of Portuguese.
Yeah. It's like they're similar enough that you can sort of find words that you're like, okay, that's kind of the same, but yeah, different enough that you couldn't pass yourself off as a native speaker or a fluent speaker.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was just tricky enough to really, and I mean, like, the more I study Portuguese, the more I realize how different the both are. Like, obviously it helps a lot to know Spanish. And I'm not going to say they're not similar in any way, but also the more you learn, the more you realize words that you thought meant one thing actually mean something completely different. and it's really fun. Like, when I went to Brazil, there's loads of Argentinians in Brazil, and they all think they speak Portuguese. And then the Brazilians all think they speak Spanish. And so they talk to each other kind of in their own language or whatever, like, they think the other language is. And they actually don't understand each other at all. So one person will say something and the other will repeat it in Spanish or something. And then the Brazilian will be like, oh, yeah, that's what I meant. But if you know both languages, you know that that is not what they meant. They're actually, like, saying something completely different. And so that's quite funny. That's something, like, when you get started,
when you know both of them,
it's
really funny to listen to them try to speak to each other.
Exactly. And it just takes time to really, like, realize what the differences are between the languages.
Knowing all these extra languages, does it ever feel kind of like a superpower? Like, are you ever on, like, a train or a bus in, like, a Portuguese or Spanish speaking place, just listening and, like, being like, they don't know I understand them, but it's kind of cool?
Oh yeah, for sure. And especially because I'm, like, blonde and European looking, and when I go to Latin America, they have no idea what's coming for them, you know. They're just like, they usually think
ever overheard people, like, talking about you or something? It's always been my dream to, like, be, like Chris said, like, on a train or a bus or something like that, and overhear someone, like, make a comment about me.
Yeah.
Let them speak for a bit and then turn around and just respond in their language just to see their face.
Well, yes, that has happened. But the thing is that in a lot of, I don't know, it's really hard, but when people think you don't speak a language, it generally doesn't matter what you say, even if you respond fluently, they still kind of think that you, like, oh, maybe picked up some words.
Oh my God,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not fluent in anything, but my wife has that exact thing. We'll be on a train, they'll be literally talking about us in Mandarin, and at the end of the thing, she'll, like, say something to them, like, and they'll just sort of be like, huh? Like, even though it's literally their language, they just assume that, you know, Paleface doesn't speak Chinese.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Or they just don't, or they're like, oh, she knows a couple of words, that's cute, you know? And but they never really, a lot of times I'll tell them, like, oh, I speak Portuguese or I speak Spanish or something, and then later they're like, oh, okay, that's nice, and they just don't really respond to it, and then I'd just go do something else, and then they hear me speak to someone else, and they come back to me, and they're like, oh, you didn't tell me you, like, spoke Spanish. I was like, I did, though. Like, I literally told you. But they somehow...
I used those exact words,
yeah. But it just, usually they just, I don't know, expect when people say that they speak the language, they expect them to be, like, to be learning it or something.
Yeah, you're like, ¿dónde está la biblioteca?
Yeah.
And they're like, yep.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. No, and I've met so many Latinos here in the Netherlands, and I would tell them, oh, yeah, I speak Spanish. And they're like, oh, so you want to practice Spanish? And I was like, no, like, I speak it. If you want to speak Spanish, we can do
you
so.
Can practice it with me.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you feel like you're living in a different country, you might like to, like, you might enjoy to speak your native language with me. I don't know.
What?
But, you know, I'm not fussy either way. I can speak English as well. But they somehow just think it's for, like, practice or to get better or something. And I'm like, I'm fairly fluent. I don't need to practice. Like,
you don't need the practice.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like I don't want to sit down for coffee and talk about what pets I have or something, you know? Like, it's not.
The old language exchange.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, you kind of did say that to the Portuguese people, that you spoke Portuguese.
I know. I yeah. Yes. Yeah. I tricked, but the funny thing, I think I was friends with them for like maybe half a year or a year or something. But by the end, I was like, not, I don't want to say fluent, but conversational at least. You know, like I could kind of keep up with them, which is nice.
That's
so
that's literally all I'm asking for French.
Yeah,
I don't expect to like ever get to a point where I'm like could literally speak to anyone in France about anything. Like I just want to be able to go somewhere in France and just like be conversational,
yeah,
and not have to like struggle to really think and understand what they're saying to me.
Yeah,
I don't need to be a translator or like, you know, academic fluent, but I'd love to be able to like go to Japan and speak Japanese or go to Korea and speak Korean in a way that at least I can have a conversation and, you know, without miming and that frantic kind of interpretive dance you do when you're trying to describe, like, I need to go to the toilet, let me just pretend to pee and you'll point me in the right direction. Which is literally the most effective way to do it, at least in Asia.
Oh,
Just hold an imaginary penis and go shh, and, like, oh, and they'll point you to a bathroom. Harder for a girl, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might look at you like you're just trying to tell them that you have a penis.
Yeah.
They're like, yes, good for you, sir.
And so you studied linguistics in university, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
So what do you like learn when you study a degree in linguistics?
So linguistics
is it like the history of languages or
no? There's a
how to learn languages.
It can be a lot of different things. So linguistics is kind of the overall thing, but there's a lot of subcategories in linguistics, subfields. So you have like phonology and phonetics, which is about, you know, the speech and the sounds. There's syntax, which is about sentence structure. There's morphology, which is really about like the what they call like the meaningful parts of a word. And like there's all these different subfields. And it can also be the history of a language or language acquisition or something. I think that's more like applied linguistics. But there's a lot of different subfields. And when I started my degree, so my degree was actually, it's called Latin American Studies, but it's kind of a broad, so it had a little bit of everything, including linguistics. And then I chose linguistics to be my major. And because I don't always want to explain to everyone what Latin American Studies is, I just tell people that I study linguistics. Which still raises a lot of questions. So it's like a... It's fine.
You didn't really dodge a bullet there.
No, but it's still, because otherwise I have to explain both and now I have to explain one. But it was funny because when I started, because Latin American, of course, they speak Spanish and Portuguese. And so all students of this study got to choose between Spanish and Portuguese for the language that they wanted to learn. And because I already spoke Spanish and my Portuguese was kind of there but not really, I decided to choose Portuguese. And so we got some Portuguese linguistics classes, which included like I said, phonetics, phonology, morphology. And in the beginning I hated it. Like I it was too like impractical and theoretical for me, and I didn't really understand why we were learning all that. But after a while I realized that one of the major things that was holding me back in Portuguese and like keeping me from properly speaking the language was the pronunciation, because that's like maybe the biggest difference with Spanish is that the pronunciation is just completely different. And I really struggled with that because I would see a word and it was written almost identical to Spanish, but then the pronunciation would be so different. And it just felt wrong to do something that was so different to what I felt was like, it's kind of like English, but I guess with English, I was already used to it, you know?
Yeah, English is such a clusterfuck of a language.
Yeah, it makes no sense at all.
There's no rhyme or reason. Because we just keep stealing words. We're like, this is a French word, so pronounce it like the French word. And then you'll be like, oh, okay, so I should always pronounce this letter this way. I'm like, no,
not at all.
What are you doing?
You know.
Yeah, there's always like a rule, but then there's like 500 exceptions to the rule.
Yeah.
I am so glad that I was born like into an English-speaking country instead of having to learn it later, because it, like, trying to teach it to my Chinese students, they'd be like, but teacher, you said this was the rule. And I'm like, yeah, but it's just not in this case. And they're like, why? And I'm like, look, just because. Like, yeah. I can't explain it because I don't know why. I'm just like, look, it's a French word. We say rendezvous. I know it should be rendezvous in English. Just suck it up and say it this way I'm teaching it to you. And they're like, this is stupid. I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teacher of the year over there.
This was the end of 5 years of teaching spoiled rich Chinese kids. So just I was
fucking
at the end of
say it the way I'm telling
just
you to
fucking
say it.
Coup d'etat.
No, but that's exactly it. Like, it's very hard sometimes for as if you're an adult learning a new language to kind of to not associate the word that you see written with the way it's pronounced. Because you already have this set way of thinking how something should be pronounced, you know, like the phonology and how sounds work together. Like, oh, if an H comes after a P, this is how you pronounce, you know, like all these things that make sense in your language. But then when you go to another language, it doesn't work like that at all. And so in my linguistics class, we were going over all that, and then suddenly it like clicked for me, and I was like, oh, this is how I should be pronouncing it. And like writing it down in IPA, the way, like the phonetic alphabet, it just suddenly made everything so clear for me. And then as I was improving my pronunciation, I realized that like speaking just became so much easier. And suddenly I felt like comfortable speaking and I felt fluent because the words just came out like, yeah, like literally more fluently. Like they just,
yeah,
it was a lot easier. So,
and so your fluency, do you read and write as well as speak Portuguese and Spanish? Like, you're comfortable to write in both languages?
Yes, yeah.
Cool. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and I think if you if you compare language learning between adults and children, one of the big advantages that you have as an adult is that you can already read and write, you know? Which as a child you can't. So you have so much more reference and you can like write words down so you can better memorize them later on. And you can approach a language from a completely different perspective than you would as if you were a child, because as a child you just, you know, you learn it.
You're just learning the words.
Yeah, you're speaking it first and then later you then associate words and how they're written to the sounds that you've learned previously. But as an adult, you have so much more reference as well. And it's a great way to learn a language as well, as
then
that it's really important.
I mean, in general, like I feel like the kind of general consensus is that it's harder to learn a language as an adult. And I feel like that's not exactly true, especially if you're already bi or trilingual or something like that.
Yeah.
But like, is there a part of your brain that like changes when you're learning a language? So, like, 'cause I feel like it is like, if you only speak one language, the general consensus is it's harder to learn a new one as an adult.
I
feel like that's what I keep telling myself is like an excuse of why I'm trying to learn French.
I think that's mostly, I want to say, confirmative bias. Although of course there is like, there's a truth to it in the sense that, obviously, if you've done something more often, then you get maybe more skilled at it, or you get a better understanding of maybe how you learn as an individual. I think that was like maybe my biggest advantage in learning a language now, is not that I necessarily am better at it, but I know how I can trigger myself into learning a language.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, you've learned the tools that work best for you, whereas a person who's just coming from an English base might be like, there's so much language to learn. Where do I start? How do I start? You've already sort of got your head around that. You can be like, okay, I know that for me, it's watching movies in that language. Or for me, it is, I'm going to learn how to read and write it. And from there, I'll grow my knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Because as I mentioned, like when I was learning French and German, I completely failed, you know, because just the way that it was taught in school just wasn't for me. And so when people now, when they hear I speak multiple languages, they like usually very quick to say like, oh, you must be very good at it. And it's not true at all, you know, it's just something I did. But I also failed at it many times, and I'm still failing at it, because when last semester I was in Spain actually doing an exchange, and I was in Valencia, which is where they also speak their own local language. And so I was like, oh, I thought it'd be like really cool to learn that, you know?
What is the language there, the local one?
So it's called Valencian, but it's kind of a part of Catalan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like a different denomination.
I was gonna guess Catalan as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's I mean, it's one of many languages in Spain, but it's a different denomination for the same languages, basically. But they had free classes at university, so it was like, oh, this is great. Like, I can just go and I can pick up some extra credit and like learn a new language.
Pick up another language.
Yeah, just why not, you know? And I thought, oh, it's like close to Spanish. It has like a little bit of French, a little bit of Portuguese. I know those languages. It's going to be easy. And it was not easy at all. I was so lost there. And I learned nothing. It was awful. Yeah, so it's one of those things.
Looking back, Catalan or Valencian did not make your list of languages.
Yeah, but it was also because I was back in that like classroom setting, which didn't work for me in the first place.
I feel like I'd really struggle in a classroom setting. It's never, I didn't enjoy school for that way at all. Like I did a lot of my own study. Like at home, I would figure out my own way to do well. But classroom wise, I got bored. I was distracted. I felt like a lot of the stuff you have to do is arbitrary.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a mindset though, for me at least. Like I'm just not good in a classroom. And so I know I can't learn a language by sitting down and doing rote learning, you know, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like full submersion is definitely the way to go. Like even just living in Mexico for 6 months, my Spanish just got so much better. But it's just because you're just constantly surrounded by it and you can figure out what people are saying or, you know, asking the meaning of things when they're speaking to you. And then you just kind of pick up more. Like even I lived in Croatia and I couldn't tell you anything except for hello and please and thank you and beer. Now I'm in Croatian, but when I lived there, I could say a lot more just because I was around it and would just ask my friends how to say certain phrases. And then you just constantly, you're using it every day.
Yeah.
You retain it. And then, yeah, so I need to just do like a full submersion thing in, I almost said Spain, in France.
What I find really fascinating too is like, so I lived in South Korea for 3 years when I was in my mid-20s. So that's 12 years ago. And I knew a little of the language then, and I still remember some of it today. But the moment I stepped off a plane, I went back for a visit a few years ago, and like it's so weird how much of it you still have hidden in there until you need it. Like until I was walking through a market and hearing things, it's like, oh, that he just said that costs too much. This guy just said he wants like extra rice. It's funny how much you keep in your head and you don't think it's in there anymore, and right up until you're experiencing the language again, and then you're like, oh, that's what that meant. Oh, I missed this. And then you start getting excited again. Like, I really, really do want to learn another language to a point of fluency just for that reason. I think it'd be cool to be able to do that.
It's one of those things that once you reach a certain level, like you might get a little rusty, you know. Like, I definitely realize that when, even now when I'm back in the Netherlands and I'm speaking Dutch every day, and when I'm speaking English now, I realize that I'm, like, making certain mistakes or sometimes I can't quite think of the word that I want to use. Whereas if I'm only speaking in English, that's a lot easier. And I might have the opposite with Dutch, like the same thing, but with Dutch. So it's, but it always like stays in there. So you kind of like, once you reach a certain level, you might sort of lose it in the moment. But when you are back in the setting and you're like surrounded by it again, it takes maybe 5 minutes, maybe a day to get like back into it. And then you're just at the same level that you were before, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I've spoken English my whole life and almost nearly every day there's words I can't remember what that means. Yeah. What things are. And it's the only language I speak.
That's just the beer.
It's wine tonight. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry.
It's always it's the excuse that I use when I don't know a word. I'm just like, oh, it's not my native language, you know. But I also know that I wouldn't be able to say it in Dutch either.
So you're fluent in four languages. Are there any other languages you sort of consider yourself to be conversational in, or that you're working on building a base in?
Well, my mother is actually from this region in the Netherlands where they speak a different language, which is kind of like the Catalan of the Netherlands. So I understand that, but I think my mother is downstairs. If she heard that I said that I spoke it, she would probably disown me or something.
Does she just run up the stairs with the wooden spoon out? You stop.
Yeah. She would send you an email explaining the truth. It's funny because when I grew up, I never realized that they spoke a different language because I was a child and it just like happened to me. But I was always there with the family and the family only spoke that language. So I could understand it fluently, but I never spoke it because it just never occurred to me to say something different. And so I kind of know that language. Like I understand it fluently, but I don't speak it. But as far as like new languages, I'm very curious about learning Swedish for some reason. Because I watch a lot of like I told you guys, I love learning a language through like movies or something, and I watch a lot of Swedish like murder and crime shows.
They make some good stuff.
They make really good stuff.
All the Scandinavians do. The Norwegian ones are really good as well.
Yeah.
Every second show on Netflix is like an adaptation of a classic Swedish murder mystery. It's bizarre. Yeah. I'm like, there's no one left in Sweden. They're all dead. There's just one killer and one cop. That's it.
That's the funniest part because they don't have any crime, so they just make it up. Like, it's so funny. Fascinating. I love it. But because I watch all these shows, like the only thing that I know how to say in Swedish is like, it wasn't me. I don't know anything.
Like, you'll go to Sweden and they'll be like, why? She knows all the words for blood spatter.
Yeah.
She's struggling with asking me how much this food is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, when I started with Portuguese, I watched basically three shows. So it was Friends, it was Scrubs, and CSI. So, like, my vocabulary was limited to, like, murder weapon, blood spatter, and then I knew how to say the janitor from Scrubs, and that was it, basically.
And how you doing.
And how you doing. Yeah, that was, like, the things I picked up.
How do you say how you doing in Portuguese?
I think they just translated it to, like, tudo bem, like is everything all right, or AIE. Which is like the kind of WhatsApp version of
AIE.
Yeah, AIE. Like yeah. That. It's a really AIE. Cool one. Just vowels.
Nice. Yeah. Easy to remember.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell people I speak Portuguese now.
And then all you know how to say is AIE. So they think you're just trying to come on to them. So with all of your linguistical knowledge, what would you think is like, I'm curious to know what your opinion is, like what like the harder, like hardest languages to learn.
Oh, I mean, first of all, it depends obviously on what language you already know. So if you know, I mean, I think that's the biggest, but for an English speaking person, I think Asian languages, if they're tonal, you know, I think that the different tones. God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
Mandarin, I thought was hard with five. And then we went to Vietnam for a year and we were like, we're going to take lessons. We're going to learn Vietnamese. There's seven tones.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm out. Like no, five was hard enough in China. I never mastered the five. And then they're like, there's this extra one that's like, ee-ee. So like the vowel sound like repeats like, ni-ee. And I'm like, nah, that's cute. I was struggling enough with up, flat, down, and like, like wavy line, and now there's like this weird one.
I have never even started, and it seems very intimidating, to be honest. I'd like to, but it also just seems like really difficult.
Also, I feel like also when you're coming from, like, not even English speaking, but languages that use like an alphabet you're familiar with, and then going to learn a language where the alphabet's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like the even like, I guess the whole structure of the language, you know, I think that's the hardest part. Maybe with Asian languages is that it's not like words, but it's the characters that then make a word, you know?
I've also heard for English speakers that, I think, is it Polish is considered quite hard to learn?
I think Polish and Hungarian are like...
Yes, yeah. They're like super hard for English speakers to learn. I don't know if it's true of everyone, but... and then Arabic's obviously up there as well, just because it's a whole other alphabet you've got to work with.
Yeah.
I had to like... And Google Translate does not help. Because like... I had to, like, for my job, we're working with this company where all of their, like, workers are Polish. Mm-hmm. And so we needed to translate some of our stuff for work into Polish. And so I'm just like, oh, I'll go to Google Translate. And I needed to know how to say not, like, not done. So something's done or not done.
Yeah.
And so I Google Translate, like, not done from English to Polish. And there's like, five different things that came up as options. And I was like, how do I choose which one it is?
Yeah.
And then so my colleague called his brother-in-law, who's Polish, to be like, well, I'll ask him. And the word he wrote down and gave to me was none of the five on the Google Translate list.
Google Translate.
And then I go to type that word into Google Translate in Polish to see if it will translate to English, and it does. And like, why was this not on the list?
Did it translate to not done?
Yeah.
Google Translate is brilliant, but it's also really flawed because it can't account for like the way the language differs in how they might express something. Like, I know, for example, like Mandarin, the number of things you can put in, like you're like, I need to know how to say this. And you'll show a Chinese person and like, we would never say that. And it's like, it's technically the correct translation, but it's just not how the language works in practice. And that's where it can become really a useful tool for like showing a single word. Like if you want to just say like, I'm looking for rice, but as soon as you try and express like a complex thought, it translates each word individually instead of the sentence as a whole.
Yeah.
And so you're left with this nonsensical collection of words and they're like, I don't know what you're asking me, mate.
Yeah. I mean, even with like, cause I've traveled so much. I mean, all of us have traveled so much. So all of us will have friends that are from a bunch of different countries, and I'll have friends that will post things on Facebook or Instagram in different languages.
Oh yeah.
And there's now the like see translation button. And even when I click that, I'm like, I still don't understand what they're trying to say.
Yeah. Because a lot
of the words are translated first of all, because they're probably slang or something like that. And then the sentence structure, cause they're literally translating every word individually. And so because the sentence might not be structured the way it would be in English.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And things are shuffled around. I'm like, I kind of know what they're probably talking about, but not.
A lot of times I'll see like a really funny translation and I'll send it to my friend and I'm like, I need to know what this actually means. Like I just, there's like, I see the translation and I see the picture and I'm like, I cannot figure out what this is supposed to mean and I need to know.
Yeah. I've seen that with a lot of friends traveling, especially like Danish and Norwegian friends, and they'll post like they'll be traveling somewhere and they'll post a caption with like a palm tree and they'll do C's translation. I'm like, that doesn't go together at all.
Yeah, like what is
this? Is not what they meant.
Yeah, I think it just shows like how complex a language can be, you know, because there's so many different interpretations and certain words. I think English is a complex language as well because it has so many like phrasal verbs, you know, to like go on or to go out
behind words.
Yeah
Language is just, English feels like one big inside joke in a lot of ways, like in the sense that you really need to have grown up speaking it to get a lot of things, because we have all these idioms and we have all of these colloquialisms that don't mean what you think they mean, unless you speak English, and then you're like, oh, of course that's what that means.
Yeah,
but it's such a complex language to learn from scratch. I feel like it would be a nightmare.
One of my really good friends, Florian, she's French, and I would forget, like, and she speaks French, English, and Spanish, and she learned Spanish in school. She speaks it fluently, but her English is definitely still rough around the edges. And there was constantly, like, I would say something and she'd be like, what do you mean this? And she'd like say it back to me. And I'm like, oh, like that's, it's like an idiom. It's just a phrase.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not, I get that if you're taking that literal, it sounds very, very strange. And then I'd have to kind of explain the translation of the phrase that I'm saying to idioms what I actually mean by it.
Yeah.
Idioms can be really tough to explain. I've done whole lessons on idioms just because they don't make sense. Like, unless you, that's what I mean when I say an inside joke. It's like you have to have grown up on the language to understand that those five words or six words always go together. Like, yeah. But if you use them separately, they have totally different meaning. It's such a confusing aspect of the language. But I mean, other languages have it. Mandarin has a whole bunch. And one of the words I'll use in today's game is like literally a Chinese idiom that has an English meaning. But if you translated it in Google, you'd be like, why is that a thing you say? Why would you ever say that out loud?
Yeah, for
sure.
She
doesn't know about the game yet, Chris. Shush. Oh.
conversely, on the topic of, you know, we're talking about difficult languages to learn, I will throw out a language that's actually really easy to learn because it's a perfect language in the sense that it was designed. Like, from scratch, it was built. And that's Korean. Like, it was literally designed so that there were no weird complications. They didn't take words from another language and then translate them in. There's 24 characters that cover all of the sounds the language should make. All the words are 1 to 3 syllables. It is like you can learn to read Korean in like 2 hours, and you could and then you could pronounce anything you saw.
That's really
cool.
So if
you're looking for a language to get under your belt that's like super easy to learn, Korean is a brilliant language for that. And I actually feel terrible because I lived there for 3 years and didn't learn to speak it. but in hindsight, I kick myself because I look at how simple their alphabet is. Because it's like, I mean, English only has 2 more characters, but English, every letter has different sounds it can make.
Yeah.
Korean, 24, they only ever make 1 sound, and you just stitch them together to make words. So if you're looking for a language to pick up in a couple of hours on a plane ride, it's got to be Korean.
That's a good tip, yeah.
So you run Foreign Language Collective,
yes,
which is an Instagram account and a website, correct?
Yeah. It's like it's a blog. It's there's a Facebook page and there's an Instagram account. Yeah.
Which that's how I found you, because I like love foreign languages and I love, because you post a bunch of memes and stuff,
yeah,
about learning different languages.
Yeah.
And especially because I struggle so much just to learn French and Spanish, which shouldn't be that hard compared to other languages. I always find your like memes about the struggles of learning French, yeah, hilarious. And that's how I found you, and been following you for a while. But you have a new project, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so as we're talking about idioms.
Untranslatable, which,
yeah,
is kind of funny because we were just talking about idioms.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, so obviously as a language learner, idioms is something you come across all the time, and every single time somebody says something or I see something online, I'm like, what does this mean? But just beyond what it means, I'm always like, okay, but who actually like uses this, and like where is it used? Because if an American person says something, that doesn't mean Australians say it as well, or mm-hmm, or even that everyone in the US uses that. And so like partially because I love learning languages and partially because I study linguistics and I'm curious about those little things about languages, I was like, wouldn't it be great if there was like an urban dictionary where people can just add stuff, but they also like fill out kind of a short survey just giving that type of information, like who uses it, like is it hipsters, is it teens, is it rich people, is,
oh,
it
cool,
you know, yeah, like that important information.
Hilarious.
That you as
in, and super important information if you're trying to learn a language.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of times you're
having the context behind that phrase, so it helps you if you're trying to learn that language, then use it in real life.
Yeah,
in the correct way.
And to know as well if you're able to use it, you know, because if you're like watching any TV show, like if you're watching Downton Abbey, you might learn English, but it might not be appropriate for you to use it because it just sounds very strange if you would.
Well, and I like that you brought up that, like, is it, like, you know, teens or hips or something? I'm just imagining, like, some, you know, 70-year-old man that is fluent in, you know, maybe he's from Spain or something like that, but he's trying to learn English, coming up to me being like, that's lit.
Yeah, exactly.
What is up, dog? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it can also change depending on who says it, you know, like a word said by something who's 70-year-old might not mean the same thing as when it's said by a 17-year-old.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so I thought it would be so interesting because to native speakers, all of that information comes so natural. But yet, when you post it somewhere on the internet, you usually only post what it means. But you don't post all that like additional information about the word or the phrase or the idiom or whatever that actually makes it interesting or that would actually be valuable. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, if it's not out there already, then why don't I create it? You know, because I with the Foreign Language Collective, and I also have a different blog that's called Nationality Unknown, which is also kind of about traveling and living abroad. I have all this like reach on the internet and all these people who love to submit things, you know, like if I share a phrase, there's always thousands of people commenting saying, oh, I have a phrase as well. Like, could you share mine or something? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I kind of want to make something that could actually serve for that, where people can just submit their own things. And it could be this huge collection of idioms and expressions in different languages, which can help you if you're learning the language, but also if you're just curious and you just like learning about different languages, you can browse it and kind of just see all the curious things that people say in different languages.
Yeah, it's like all user-generated content, which makes it easier for you as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. I mean, but that's the thing. I couldn't even research it if I wanted to, you know? Like, it would be...
you'd have to live in every country, a lifetime in every country to be fluent enough.
And to understand all the nuances, you know, you have to ask mm-hmm. people anyway. And yeah.
So you've got a Kickstarter starting in 4 days, 3 hours, 20 minutes, and 47 seconds at the time of recording.
Yeah.
Although when this episode airs, the Kickstarter will already have started.
Yeah. So I'm working on the Kickstarter. I think it's really exciting. Like, the more I'm working on it, the more excited I get, because one of the rewards, because obviously the platform will be free to use for everybody, and I don't want to make that like a paid feature, you know, to have to be able to look mm-hmm. up information. But that makes it tricky because I do need to get the funds to actually create this. And so I came up with the idea to create a calendar which has a different untranslatable idiom or phrase or expression from a different language each month. And it has a cute little illustration with it. And so that's one of the rewards that you can get for the Kickstarter. There's also loads of other things for language learners. So I have a list of the 1,000 most important words and phrases in a bunch of different languages. I think there's currently like 23 languages, but I'm adding more this month. So there will be more.
I was literally just on it earlier looking, because there's three languages I wanted to learn, and they were... Mandarin Chinese, Japanese, and Georgian, but those are three that aren't available yet. So I was excited
four,
when you.
Chris.
What's that?
That's four. You can't count.
No, Mandarin Chinese is one language.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, I'm wrong.
So I don't want to make any promises, but I'm pretty sure that those three are a part of the next group that I'm bringing out. Oh, yeah,
nice. And that's a different website again as well, right? Like, you've got that through Kickstarter, but that's also a website already where you can get those 1,000 words.
Yes, you can already buy them, but they're usually they're cheaper for your audience. So we have there's a 50% off with the
description.
Yeah, that's it. And I think you guys have the link.
If anyone's listening and want to buy in a language that is available, and hopefully more coming out soon, of the 1,000 most important words and phrases in any language.
That's
and
right.
And use Decode Baggage, you get 50% off.
But we'll, I'm sure, have all of this information in the description, yeah. So you don't need to be frantically typing baggage into your phone right now.
Although, if you listen to this podcast and you can't remember the word baggage, then...
Give yourself an uppercut, yeah.
Yeah. You need some help. Lay off the wine.
Hello, pot, meet kettle.
As I was creating the code.
That's really cool, though, and we'll put the link to that as well in the description so people can easily find it.
Perfect.
So that's exciting. So the Kickstarter launches. It will have already launched when this comes out, and so we'll put the link to that as well for people to find. And it looks, I mean, you already got like almost 14,000 people that are signed up following the project and interested in it. So yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, there's even more now. So it's, people are definitely like,
signed up. Yeah.
Perfect.
I signed up too. I was kind of hoping the little number thing would move.
Oh, it didn't? But damn.
No, because it has the little plus symbol. So it's like, there's more.
I know.
I keep checking back every day to make sure that number goes up.
Yeah.
That's so cool, though. And actually, so we have a game.
Okay.
And we're going to test your knowledge on untranslatable words.
Okay.
And I don't think you have any. I did scope out your Instagram and stuff, and I don't know where you find your words for it, but I don't think you had posted any of these yet. So we're hoping you might not know what we're saying. And Chris knows how to pronounce his three. I have no idea. So it'll be entertaining for you at least to hear me try to pronounce them.
Yeah.
I smartly chose words that I already knew.
I guess I could have chosen like Czech or Croatian words, but
yeah,
this is more fun.
I'm looking forward to
it. I also really like the meanings of the ones that I chose, which I think is why I chose them. But Chris, do you want to go first? Are you going to say where they're from? Or are you just going to say the word and she has to guess where it's from? And what it means.
I think I'll give you where it's from and the word, and then you can try and guess the meaning, although I'm not really expecting anyone to guess them. It's more like a fun, teachable moment.
Yeah.
So okay. My first word comes from Mandarin Chinese, and it is mama hoo hoo.
Vagina.
No. No, ew. No.
I don't know. I hear hoo hoo, and I'm pretty sure that's what I called it when I was two. So,
mama, any guesses?
No. Does it have? No. Do you not have like a literal translation as well?
It does have a literal translation. The literal translation is horse, horse, tiger, tiger.
Okay, that doesn't clarify anything, but.
This is what I mean, where it's like, that's literally what it means, but no Chinese person says mama hoo hoo wanting to say horse, horse.
Tiger, yeah, no, tiger. I mean.
It basically means like so-so, you know, like how's things going? Mama hoo hoo, so-so.
How are things going? Horse, horse, tiger, tiger.
Yeah. And
do you think they do that with emojis as well? Do you think they'll just...
You totally could.
Oh my God, that is fantastic.
Just do right? Two horses and two tigers and a Chinese person would probably know what you meant.
I love that. I'm going to start doing that when people ask me how I'm doing. I'm just going to send two horses and two tigers.
This is actually outside of the game, but I have one other Chinese phrase that I think everyone should know. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you guys it, and then I'll tell you what it means. It's jiayou.
Okay.
And what it directly translates into is add gas or add oil. But what it means when they say it to you is like, you can do it, you know, like good luck. So like, you know, if my wife has like a big meeting coming up, I'd be like, hey, jiayou, which is like, yeah, add gas.
I mean, I can kind of get the add gas, like,
yeah,
like if you yeah, exactly. That really helps. Okay, mine. Which one should I go with first? I'll do
the easiest okay. one to pronounce.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna do. Kummerspeck.
Kummerspeck, and this is German, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's German.
Yeah.
Kummerspeck.
Well, this is how good my German is.
Oh yeah, you've got some bass in this. Yeah, I got some bass. I'm like a Schmetterling and ich liebe dich.
No, I.
Is it like gherkin in the gherkin, like fucking in the kitchen? That was something I think someone told me years ago, and I don't actually know if it's true.
Oh, it definitely means that, yeah. But it's not something we say.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's this phrase that for some reason Dutch people keep telling and teaching foreigners. And so it keeps coming back to us in different ways because it sounds fun, but it's not actually something we say. It just has like a nice alliteration to it or something.
Yeah.
It does sound like a fun word for an interesting activity.
Yeah.
So any guesses for Kummerspeck? I'll tell you what it means. The literal translation of it is grief bacon.
Oh, is it like eating your feelings?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool.
It's excess weight gained from emotional overeating.
Oh, that's awesome. That's what we need.
Yeah.
Grief bacon, though, is like grief the perfect translation.
Grief bacon sounds like what you bring to a funeral if you're just really not very good at bringing food to funerals. Like, yeah, I brought you some grief bacon.
I don't know. It feels like bacon. Yeah, I think that's great.
All right. So my next one is a Korean phrase.
Okay.
And it is baram dongi.
Okay. What does it mean?
It almost sounds like you're doing the, like, baram bum.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, baram means wind, if that helps.
Is there a literal translation?
The literal translation is like windy boy.
So is it like farting?
It's not farting, which is what I thought it was when my students used to call me this.
What was it again?
Windy boy.
No, but what's the word?
Baram dongi.
Interesting. I have no idea.
And your students used to call you this?
Yes, which is why I thought it was a fart joke. The actual meaning, this doesn't make any sense to me. No, it means playboy. Because like a playboy is like as unreliable as the wind.
Oh, I mean,
they called me this because I had two girlfriends in an entire year. There was no overlap.
Quite the playboy.
I had a new one. They were like, "Oh, but I'm not gay."
Yeah, quite the playboy.
It can also mean playgirl, but it's not as commonly used. Basically, just someone whose feelings are as inconstant as the wind.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Yeah.
Okay, are you ready for my second one?
I'm ready for your second one.
Shemo me jamo. I think I actually said it right that time.
And you said this is Georgian, right?
Yeah, so this is Georgian. Shemo me jamo.
I should know this soon because this is the country I'm planning to live in next year. So I'm excited to learn my first word of Georgian. This will literally be my first word.
Interesting.
But I have no idea what it means.
Do you have any
guesses?
Do you have a translation?
A food-related one.
Do you have a translation? Yeah.
No, because like the translation is pretty much what it means.
It's so much easier when you're using a romantic language because I can sort of try and guess from the etymology, like find a word in English that's borrowed a similar root word.
Yeah.
But I'm going to struggle with Georgian because it doesn't have a shared root, I don't believe. Shimomi.
Just any guess.
Is it...
Amarins, do you have any guesses?
No.
Food you eat while you're drunk. What is it?
It means I accidentally ate the whole thing. So it says, you know when you're really full, but your meal is just so delicious you can't stop eating it? The Georgians feel your pain. This word means I accidentally ate the whole thing.
That's a really good one.
Jamo.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
That is literally me every time I eat something delicious.
Yeah.
I know I'm full. And isn't there like a rule if you start to feel full, it still takes everything else you're eating like 7 minutes to get to your stomach. So like you're going to feel even worse if you don't stop now. Yeah. And I'll just keep eating something till I'm dead.
My last word, you might be able to guess because it's in Afrikaans, which I believe is descended from Dutch, right?
Indeed. Yeah.
All right, and it doesn't. There's no literal translation because that is literally what it means. Okay. So it's spir, and I'm going to pronounce this horribly because I haven't spoken any Afrikaans in like 7 years. It's a spiritier.
Spiritier. Spiritier. I'm not sure if I can relate that to anything in Dutch.
It might not, because I know a lot of it doesn't translate directly across. Does anyone want to guess?
No.
Spiertier?
I just like go literal with the sounds. I'm like, knife crying.
Knife crying. It's...
You know, spiertier.
Yeah, spiertier. It's like when you're so sad, you're angry. Knife crying. Spiritier means muscle tiger.
But why?
No, I don't even know, but I know it's a thing because I re-googled it to make sure it wasn't a nonsense phrase my friend taught me. And you can buy t-shirts that say muscle tiger. But my best guess is that it looks like it's like someone who works out a lot.
Just like a really, really like, bulky, ripped person.
Yeah, but I can't find a direct translation anywhere. All I can find is shirts that say Spiertir, and they have, like, a muscly pair of arms on them.
Interesting.
Maybe because, like, people that are really ripped, they get, you know, you see, like, their veins and stuff, so it's like tiger stripes or something.
I honestly don't know, because my Afrikaans friend used to call me this, and I was about 20 pounds heavier than I am now, so I was definitely not a muscle tiger. I was more like a lard kitten. I don't even know. but yeah, that's my last one. It makes no sense, and I don't know why it's a thing, but apparently it is. You can buy a shirt for 220 rand if you're interested.
That's interesting. Maybe we should I should ask someone from South Africa to explain it.
I know. I kept asking the girl who used to say it, but she just laughs, and that's been her reaction for the 8 years since she started saying it.
Okay.
I work with a South African guy, so I'll ask him.
And he'll be like, it means nothing. It's nonsense.
Yeah. It's a completely made up word.
Well, okay. When I've said it to other Afrikaans speakers, they've been like, that doesn't mean anything. So it could even be, the girl who told me this was from Potchefstroom, which is like a rural area. So it could even be that it is a, like a regional Afrikaans thing. And that killed the conversation.
Sorry. No, I'm sorry. My mom,
because I was trying to listen how to pronounce something. And then I forgot to unmute myself.
Because your next word is like impossible for you to pronounce.
Yeah, it is. It's really bad.
And you okay, let's hear it. Let's brace.
Okay. Mama le panit tape. Mama le panit tape.
Okay.
I'm just glad you're near a hospital while you're having a stroke. So.
And what language
and where
is this?
Is this from?
Tierra del Fuego.
Which is in Argentina for those playing at home.
Yeah. So it's the Yaghan language of Tierra del Fuego.
I don't even know where I'd start trying to guess the meaning of this because there's no common root word.
Yeah.
Is it about food again?
No. It's kind of vaguely inappropriate.
Is it like an insult?
No. It doesn't have like a translation. It just has it probably has a translation, but it, in my little description thing I found it on, it just has a a definition of it. It's capturing a look of something or
is
a special look. Is it
the look you give to an attractive person at the bar while you're with your partner?
It could be.
Oh wow, I was being as oddly specific as I could. And I would never have that look. My wife is in the room with me. I would never have a look like that in my life. What a useless phrase. I don't know. I'm tapping out. That's all I got.
Is it just a look you give someone you're attracted to if you want to, like, meet them later?
Is it like
phone them?
Is it like eyes? Yeah.
I think kind of. So the definition is, this word captures that special look shared between two people when both are wishing that the other would do something that they both want but neither want to do.
Oh, that needs to have an English word.
Yeah.
But also even the definition is kind of confusing. Like, they're both wishing the other would do something they both want but neither want to do.
Yeah, I think I read about this where it was like that kind of when two people like each other, but they're both too shy to do anything about it.
That makes sense.
So they're hoping the other person.
Yeah.
They can't know that the other person's also a coward, so they're both just like soon.
Yeah.
This is like, this word describes every relationship I had in high school, which is zero because of this stupid phrase.
This describes my relationship still. Like, this is very. Oh, yeah.
It literally describes me on every dating app.
Yeah.
Like,
this is a personal attack.
Take it off the apps and ask me on a real date.
Yeah.
Well, look at that. We've all learned 6 new phrases, 2 of which we might use again in future.
Yeah.
Remember them.
Grief bacon. Yeah, I still remember.
Yeah, kummerspeck.
Kummerspeck.
You have to remember the actual word.
Oh,
kummerspeck.
And I just offer people grief bacon.
Yeah, offer people excess weight gained from emotional overeating.
Yeah, I'll just be like, no, literal grief bacon. It'll just be sad bacon, which is Canadian bacon.
I mean, that's so true.
This is putting you on the spot, but did you have a fun sort of obscure word that you'd like us to have a guess at before we wrap things up?
Oh, I mean, there's loads of them. There's one in Dutch, which is de kat uit de boom kijken, which means de kat uit de boom kijken.
De kat uit de boom kijken. I have no idea what that means.
No idea.
And it translates to look the cat out of the tree.
So just to give it like a death stare until it does what it's supposed to do.
Until it comes out of the tree.
I actually have this is funny.
Wait, so is it like the look your mum gives you when you're in trouble? That kind of thing?
No, but it could be.
So what does it mean?
So it means, so I was kind of inspired by the previous one. So it kind of means to wait for something.
Which, because the cat won't come down.
Right? Yeah, which isn't necessarily going to happen. So it's kind of like if you go to a party and you don't speak to anyone, just to kind of like look around, see what's happening. But instead you could just like actually do something and talk to people, you know, but you're just there to just kind of, look the cat out of the tree. Which
makes a lot of sense, because a cat's not going to come down.
You know, a cat's not going to come down, especially if you look at it.
Higher up if you pursue it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just going to stare back at you.
It's funny, actually. I wish I still had this book, but I have a Dutch friend. He's from Arnhem, and he's one of my really, really good friends. He came to visit me in New York, and it was my birthday, and he brought me a present, and it was literally a pen with a little windmill on top. And then it was this handy little book that was just called Shit Dutch People Say.
Oh, yes.
And the whole book was just like strange Dutch phrases that have the weirdest literal translation than what they actually mean. And I feel like just from having that book, I just feel like the entire Dutch language is
just weird.
Like not meant to be literal.
No, we have a lot of idioms and expressions, which is like, I think once I get the dictionary up, it'll be like half filled with Dutch stuff because we just have so many expressions. Like if you would take all the expressions out of the Dutch language, I don't know what we would be left with, to be honest.
Well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much, Amarin.
Thank you for having me.
Amarin.
Yeah.
I'll learn it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And we will go ahead and list everything in the description. But for people that want to check it out right this second,
perfect.
You have Foreign Language Collective.
Yes.
And untranslatable.co.
Yeah, .co. Yeah.
Which are both on Instagram, which then you can find the links to the websites and all that stuff.
And the 1,000 most important words where we've got the discount code of baggage.
And then for those of you that want to find us, you know that we are on Instagram at comeswithbaggagepod. On Twitter at CWB Podcast, Facebook, Comes With Baggage. And don't forget to rate, review, subscribe.
And airdrop.
And airdrop us to random strangers because we love it. And we will see you next Tuesday.